Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist. And you can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, which is at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are hard to predict, sometimes hard to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, and it will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I am also doing great. Glad to be having another show tonight.
Well, you know, we're adjusting to Wednesdays, and I should just say from the outset here that our show is going to actually have to run short this evening because I have a work conflict, oddly enough. I've got some sales training that I need to deliver starting right at the top of the next hour, right when the show would normally end, and so I'm going to have to bail out of here a few minutes early in order to set up for that. I don't always have to work till 10 o'clock at night. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But tonight I definitely do because it's evening for us, but it's morning for them. So they show up first thing in the morning and get their sales training from us at night. It's just one of those fun artifacts of living in a global economy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, exactly it. And we're impressed with your industriousness, Phil, and so none of us have any problem with that. But since it looks like you may have to do it more than once, we might consider next week maybe going to Tuesday night or something. So we're going to play this by ear.
Yeah, I'm going to check on what the schedule is for all the upcoming trainings, and we'll hammer out a schedule for the program. One thing that's great about our listeners is they have been so patient with us and have stuck with us as we have moved from Sunday to Tuesday to Wednesday, and I think we've done a show every single night of the week except maybe Friday. Is that right?
I think so. I don't think we've ever done a Friday show, and
I don't think we've ever done a Friday.
Maybe we won't ever. But, yeah.
Well, I don't. I wouldn't rule it out, but that's been the one night we've missed so far. But the folks stick with us, and sometimes people miss us, but you don't ever have to miss the show because, of course, the MP3 is always up by the following morning at the very latest, and our entire series is archived right there on Blog Talk Radio. So. Hey, folks, give it a listen.
Yeah,
a lot of great stuff there. Well, speaking of great stuff that is archived up there, we're going to talk a little bit this evening about our special series coming up. We have been describing it as a special summer series. At the rate we're getting it organized, it may be a summer series, might be more of an autumn series, but we're working our way up towards it, and I think we can go ahead and reveal a little bit about it. The new series, it will probably also be a 10, 11, 12 part series, something along those lines, is going to be a continuation of our, I would say, wildly successful series from last summer, which was called The World Transformed. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to take The World Transformed up a notch, and I've attached one of my favorite phrases to The World Transformed. So our new series is going to be called The World Transformed Faster, Please. And you're familiar, of course, with Faster, Please.
Yeah. I guess the first place I saw it was over at Instapundit.
It's one of his quips, right? Glenn Reynolds will say something and say, ha, or, you know, or he'll put up a very positive technological development, and then, yeah, his tagline for that is always faster, please. I've noticed other people use it. Don't know if it originated with Glenn or not. If it did, Glenn, we're borrowing it for a few weeks. So way to start a meme, I guess. Where we want to go with this is as follows. We want to take the same basic ideas that we talked about in The World Transformed, and those have to do with abundance, nanotechnology, artificial intelligence, basically these major changes that we see coming very soon. Everything I talk about in the opening spiel, the stuff that makes up this major transformation that's occurring. And I want to revisit with the individuals that we talked with before, but rather than doing long, in-depth interviews, I'm hoping we can do a series of very short interviews with them, and we're going to say you want to do something about this, right? Say you're a person like me, you know, John Q. Fast Forward Radio listener or host, in our case. What can we do? What can motivated individuals who are interested in bringing this future about, in achieving these transformations, what can we do? So that's going to be the focus. It'll be about the same things, but you know, this time it's personal. Maybe that's our tagline. That's the old Jaws 2, right? This time it's personal. But that's where we're going to be going. World Transform Part 2. Faster, please. This time it's personal, and we're going to be looking for opportunities for those who listen to this program, and for us ourselves, and for anyone to actually transform the world. How we become involved in that ourselves.
Absolutely.
That's the plan.
We'll make for an interesting series. I look forward to it as well.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot of fun with it, and. Leading up to that, I posted a video, a YouTube video on the website today on the Speculist, and you may have noticed that Faster Please was actually the end of that particular video.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I thought it was an outstanding video. I love stuff like this where it basically, you know, it takes this idea and builds upon it as you move through it. And, yeah, you need to check that out if you haven't already. It's a Three Wishes video. It's at the Speculist. Check it out.
Please do check it out, Three Wishes. I'm going to touch briefly on those tonight, and then we've got a bunch of fun topics to get into this evening, don't we?
We do. Let's launch into one. You know, I was looking at here, Google has made some interesting investments lately, but the one that strikes me as perhaps the most interesting is their investment in the startup Recorded Future. And this is really a database mining company that in many ways it's kind of like Google in that it searches through databases, which is sort of the core business of Google, but what it does, what Recorded Future does, is it assigns likelihoods to different momentums of history, and by that assigns, predictions on what things will come to pass, what won't, and how some things will even interact. So it's an interesting thing for Google to invest in. I find that interesting. I hope that it's something that they don't just take in house. and use it to their benefit without give it to us. I would prefer there be some sort of Google
Future, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Google Future. Yeah, you just click and you want to know, well, how likely is it that I'll have my flying car in 5 years, and maybe they can give you a percentage of likelihood. So, yeah, I found that fascinating.
Well, you know, I was listening to. Taking my own advice and listening to some of our older shows a few days ago while I was working around the house, and we did, I think, gosh, one of the earliest shows back in 2007, we talked about another company that is doing something quite similar to this. I had read an article about it, and I believe we found a link or two supporting that, and I don't know if this is the same company or not. because they don't the story that you linked to, I don't think gives the name of anyone involved in this. Is that right, or maybe I just didn't see it?
Well, just the name of the company, Recorded Future. I'm gonna click
right
through and get some. Okay, here is Recorded Future. There, I'm looking at their blog now. blog.recordedfuture.com. That's interesting. Okay.
Okay. It'd be interesting to know if they were the same. Certainly, the company we talked about a couple of years ago, they make a pretty good living selling this service to the government, right? The big business will buy it. Large corporations will buy predictions, and it seems like the CIA and people like that are really interested in this kind of thing. And there's a real linkage. You and I were talking briefly before the show. Between intelligence, and I'm using the term as in the Central Intelligence Agency kind of intelligence, and
yeah, exactly.
the desire to predict outcomes. This is a major piece of actually what I do in my day job. The company that I work for, Sybase, has a analytics database that we sell, Sybase IQ, and I'm product marketing manager for that product, and we'll be giving training on that here in a few minutes. And that this database and solutions like Sybase IQ are used to drive what they call predictive analytics applications, and these have been used for a long time in financial services. They're used in insurance. And they get used in kind of a expanding range of applications. It's big in financial services because if you can actually make accurate predictions about what people are going to do, if you're lending them money, you get a tremendous advantage, obviously. So if you put in enough data and you put a model together that's reasonably accurate that says if a credit card user displays this behavior and then this behavior and then this behavior, there is a 70% chance that in 6 months they'll default, right? You've got some valuable information going in,
right,
in terms of protecting yourself from risk. And it's those kinds of things. Or in securities, they'll look for interesting, unexpected relationships between one set of stocks and a completely different set of stocks where one security isn't even invested in the other, and yet they trace some kind of parallel course where if one goes up, say Microsoft stock goes up, this other much more obscure stock 11 days later always spikes for whatever reason. You don't even necessarily have to know the reason, but you've got enough data to tell you that if this one thing happens, that other thing happens. Well, now what these folks are doing is apparently putting a predictive model in place that does the same kind of calculation, the same kind of analysis on macro events in the world, on history itself. And this is where I think probably government agencies, especially things like organizations like the CIA, have probably been working on this kind of problem for quite some time. This is the ultimate end game for military strategy, right? If you can just look at what you know about what your enemy has done, or your opponent, or your potential enemy, and from that be able to say, well, now I know what their next step is going to be. Or even if you can say, I know to 65% certainty what their next step is likely to be. Or I know to 80% certainty that it's going to be this or this. You've got this, you know, huge advantage over, gosh, I just don't know what they're going to do next, right? That's kind of where...
Not just your enemies, but, even knowing what your friends will do next.
That's right.
I mean, it's it's extremely valuable.
Well, in business, these kinds of models are used, yeah, absolutely, to predict things like risk, but also to predict things like market uptake. Obviously, when Apple introduced the iPad here, they had done major projections and analyses on, how to roll it out, what the thing should look like, who to introduce it to first, and all the different kinds of criteria lined up to try to produce that particular outcome, that particular future that they were trying to get to. And does the article say anything about?
I'm sure they were doing the same for the new iPhone, but that didn't really work out. Yeah.
Well, it, you know, it's
kind of got introduced by Engadget.
Well, you got to look for the outlier. That's the thing.
Yeah.
When you're trying to make these predictions, and we were talking before the show about how much this sounds like the psychohistory technology that Isaac Asimov uses in his Foundation series of novels, wherein the future is known to these kind of core group of scientists who are able to make exactly these kinds of predictions. But what happens, I think, in the second book is an outlier comes along, a completely unexpected individual. He's called the Mule, and he's a mutant, and he just completely blows the model because his behavior is outside of all the statistical parameters, and they don't know what's going to happen. And then eventually they get back on track, which is kind of interesting too.
History has momentum. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the math wins out in the end. Did the article say it? Because I've not read all the way through the article. Does it say any examples of the kinds of things that they're predicting or predictions that they've made?
They talked about terrorism. They talked about markets. It's like, yeah, you thought that they might. A mental measure is used to present the most relevant query results in our web user interface, but it can also be used to analyze statistical methods to predict possible future changes in momentum, which in turn can be valuable for trading decisions. I would think that the primary early uses would be to try to get a little bit of advantage on the market, and also in intelligence work. I think those would be the first and first uses for this technology. But you know, pretty much things that start out at that level, you know, before we know it, our kids will be using it. You know, I mean, it'll be on. You know, it'll be on everyone's laptop, this sort of technology. So it's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I noticed that in the chat room, DC says the more popular that predictive methodologies and software are, the higher the impact of unpredictable events. And that's absolutely right. And I think one of the big unknowns here is depending on what Google does with this, what does the dissemination of a prediction due to its to the impact of that prediction. So in other words,
exactly right. If they keep it in-house, it may be a powerful tool just for Google, but it would be a much less powerful tool for the world if it's released, I suppose, because then everyone could get in early on trends. It'd be basically public knowledge that, oh well, you know, in a month we can expect this. Based on these these probabilities, and so everybody would be able to then place their bets, and sort of the payoff would be much less, wouldn't it?
Right. Well, it's like a tip on a horse race or a stock tip that gets too widely dispersed. Right. It becomes less valuable because the betting or purchasing behavior starts to drive the market much more so than whatever the original. The original factors leading up to the prediction were. So if Google turns this into Google Future, then you've got this real interesting situation where, yeah, the predictions are going out and they're creating this kind of feedback loop. I think to an extent you get that currently with the futures markets that you see, where people are making predictions and those predictions are then being used to kind of add credibility to whether the outcome occurs or not, and you kind of build this this critical mass. But I would think
there's a bit of an echo chamber there, isn't there?
Yeah, so. I think so. You know, the self-fulfilling prophecies or self-denying prophecies, I think, are part of what happens with those. But if this were to become a Google service, you know, with the kinds of numbers of people participating in a Google thing, as opposed to Foresight Exchange or one of those offerings, which while important, are relatively light in terms of the number of people participating. The number of people doing that versus the number of people who subscribe to Google Docs or something like that, right? I mean, you see we're talking several orders of magnitude probably of difference. So this whole activity of people trying to predict the future or understand the future could really start to become a major driver in how we get to the future. And I'm not sure if that would be in a good way or a bad way. It's just all.
I would suspect that mostly it would be mostly positive. I mean, it's our expectations are important. I mean, you know, if we expect a certain thing, we tend to get around to doing a certain thing. You know, I mean, were we really ready to go to the moon in 1969? No, but we expected to get there because it was basically late. You know, laid out by martyred president. You know, that goal was there, and the country decided, okay, well, we're going to do it now. And of course, we had the Cold War and all that other behind that thing. But I think expectations had a lot to do with it too.
You know what's interesting about that is I'm scanning this my office here for the book, and I'm not finding it, and I can't think of the man's name, but. Famous futurist author, the author of Megatrends,
okay.
John Nesbitt. He had a book out about 2 years ago, and I cannot remember the name of it. I'll put it up on the blog when I think of it. But he talks about some kind of facts about the future that go against expectations, things that don't work. That are very counterintuitive, and one of the things that that he states, and he makes a pretty good argument for it, is that actually the things you expect take longer. The more you expect something, the more you delay it, as a matter of fact, which seems to run counter to your Apollo example, which I think is a really good one of, well, but surely we expected that to happen, and that's how it came to happen. So I'm gonna have to look that up because that's he makes a really good case that expectation actually slows it doesn't prevent them, right? It doesn't mean that something won't happen, but the actual expectation that it will, if you're I guess in more of a passive expectation mode, slows down the things that you would have to do to bring it about.
Is it the book Mindset?
That is the book. Very good. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. John Nesbitt, Mindset. Yeah. So you've read that? He talks.
No, I have not. I just did a search.
Oh,
I could have tried to fake it, but no, I didn't. I decided not to. So
you could have done that. You could have. Yes, Phil, I read it, and you really don't understand it. So let's move on.
Yeah, you have no clue what you're talking about.
You could not follow the man's argument. So he agreed with me, right?
maybe expectations cut both ways. You know, maybe it is that. Some of our expectations lead to things actually taking place, and then sometimes we might expect a thing to happen, therefore we don't, you know, let somebody else do it. That's going to happen. Of course that's going to happen. We'll have flying cars tomorrow, sure, yeah, no problem. And we work on other problems instead and never get around to the flying cars or whatever.
It could very well be where the expectation is directed. If you expect yourself to do something, then maybe that increases the likelihood that it will happen. If you expect others to take care of it, then if everyone's expecting that, then it kind of falls between
the cracks.
Never
happens. Yeah, maybe that's it. So
could very well be the situation.
Phil, I mean, do you think some sort of data mining group like Recorded Future could let us know whether your three wishes are going to come to pass? And of course, the three wishes mentioned in that video are that we will all be wealthy,
yeah.
And we will always be we will all be healthy. And when I say all, I mean everyone in the world,
right.
And we will all be free. Those three. So
those are the wishes. So
wishes.
To wish for I wish for everyone on Earth to be everyone in the world to be rich. I wish for everyone in the world to be healthy, and I wish for everyone in the world to be free. I think that those wishes are a little too vague to be subject to rigorous mathematical analysis. I think that the answer that the quants, the PhDs, the statisticians working on the predictive models would keep coming back with would be, well, define your terms, right? By everyone rich. Who's everyone and how much is rich and those kinds of things. And in the video, you know, we get into that and we are talking about some very relative things. One of the problems with wishing for the whole world to be rich is that rich is one of those comparative attributes. So to say I wish for the entire world to be rich is like saying I wish that the entire world was the example I give in the video is tall. Well, everybody can't be tall because to be tall, you have to be taller than someone else. The way we normally use the word rich, you have to be richer than someone else. There has to be a middle class, and there have to be poor people in order for you to distinguish who the rich people are. That's just kind of the traditional where the whole concept of wealth comes from, is that it's relative. So in
example, I mean, you know, obviously poor meant a whole different thing 100 years ago. You know, I know people here in the city I live in that consider themselves poor. And there's two cars in their household. They have cable TV, cell phones, internet, and they are, they live in air conditioning. They never miss a meal, and they have access to health care. So, and yet they consider themselves poor, perhaps because they're just living from paycheck to paycheck, but they're actually living a very rich life by comparison to someone who lives, you don't even have to go back 100 years. You can go back to the 70s, and they're living a better lifestyle and a more rich existence than folks even just back then. So,
you've got this really interesting situation of growing affluence. One of the things that people with a more pessimistic bent often point out is that incomes seem to have flattened. And whether that's true or not, whether that's a long-term trend or not, we won't get into. But one of the questions that I always ask is, okay, if incomes have flattened, has buying power flattened? Because that's the real issue. Because you can have people who are in like the bottom, 10th percentile or 20th percentile of income, and yet, to your point, they're leading what, by historical standards, worldwide historical standards, is a very affluent lifestyle. Compared to their own ancestors, or compared, frankly, to most people in the world today, these people have it pretty good. And this is not a social commentary. You know, I'm glad they have it good. Okay, that's I want everyone to have it much better than that. So that would be viewed as a criticism. I don't want to be misunderstood. Because I don't think there's necessarily a conflict there. It's not that they're complaining they're poor. In some statistical sense, they actually are. They don't have the same income that other people do. But from a historical perspective, they're rich, and that's the perspective from which I wish for everyone in the world to be rich. So I think there will be a future in which there will be rich people, there will be middle class people, and there will be poor people, and there might be a much greater divide between the top and the bottom in that future world than there is now. Okay, just in terms of total spending power.
There was a funny scene on Big Bang Theory recently where Sheldon, they found a bunch of paychecks in Sheldon's desk and said, "What's the deal? You didn't even put this in the bank?" He says, "All the things I want to buy haven't been invented yet." So, I guess the point is, as time goes by, we're able to buy things. I mean, has buying power increased? You bet it has. We have the ability to buy now things that were not even around 10 years ago. I mean, think of how cool the iPhone is. We didn't have that 5 years ago. So, buying power, of course, it's increased because the capability of our toys has increased. So,
Now, I see Matt in the chat room is saying that he's heard that buying power has declined over the last 30 years. I'd like to see the stats on that. Although he backs it up that of course you can buy stuff that didn't exist. We seem to be able to get quite a bit more thanks to the productivity levels that we've achieved. Stuff that used to be considered somewhat of a luxury or somewhat of a major expense, household appliances and that kind of thing, are very, very widely available. I mean, your example about the two cars and the air conditioner and the TV and the phone and the washer dryer, it's within living memory that not everybody had those things. And now most people do. Not necessarily two cars and not necessarily everything I just named, but by and large, even poor people have a TV, have a washing machine, a dryer, generally have a car, generally have a phone. And, I was born into a world where that wasn't the case. That's poor
right.
People didn't necessarily. Of course, now I was born into a world that was more than 30 years ago. I hasten to point out, but not that much more. It wasn't like 90 years ago or anything. I think that I think that the evidence is fairly strong that that there really is this increase in wealth relative across history. And it's due to technology. It's due to embedding of knowledge into our technological infrastructure, and it's due to great increases in productivity. In the video, I give the example of Alexander the Great. I think everyone listening to this podcast, by virtue of the fact that they have a computer, we're all richer than a guy who was basically king of the world 2,300 years ago. So, that's kind of a huge macro example, but if you can be richer than a king 2,300 years ago, and if middle class or if poor people today can be richer than middle class people around the time I was born, that's an interesting suggestion that the entire trend might be speeding up quite a bit.
Absolutely. So there we have the everybody is wealthy portion of your three wishes. So how do we get to the everybody is healthy?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. Actually, the key to everyone being wealthy is an extrapolation of that trend. I think we have to get to a place where people can source all their own material goods. And we talk about nanotechnology. We talk about the ability to replicate, basically to make a copy of anything that currently exists, the fab labs, the 3D printers, ultimately with nanotechnology giving us the ability to make anything. Once you can make anything, anybody can have anything, and you've got a world wherein everyone is essentially rich. There's a lot more to it than that. And in fact, in the video, I don't use any of that jargon, and I don't use that terminology. I'm hoping that the video can get some of these ideas across to people who don't know from a nanotechnology, right, that they might start to get a feel for some of this. But you take that idea of a universal assembler, a machine that can make anything, and if you combine that with the intelligence explosion that we're witnessing and that we expect to become considerably more noticeable over the next few decades, then you get a situation where not only can you make whatever you need in terms of synthesizing drugs, ultimately building new body parts for yourself if you need to, but the intelligence of, in the video, I ultimately end up with, say, 10,000 of the world's finest physicians available just for you, just to take care of you. And when you apply that to the entire population of the world, and I don't think that's an unrealistic expectation, I think that we'll see that happen eventually, then you've got an entire world that's both rich and healthy.
Well, I think also, think of how important data mining, like the recorded future of technology, could be in a personal physician for you. I mean, you've got an AI that devotes itself 100% of the time in thinking about how to make you healthier. And one of the things it could do is predict, based on your behavior, your latest blood test, whatever tests that the sensors of that time could perform. It could do predictions as to what the future of your health is, and maybe head things off before you even have the illness.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
Finally,
with nanobots in your body, yeah, you never even know that you're sick, because you never get sick, because it's all prevented before it can even occur.
Awesome. Yeah. So, okay, everybody's wealthy, everybody's healthy. Okay, now how do we get to the everybody's free part? I mean,
this is the tricky one.
How did we touch on that? Yeah.
This is the tricky one. I don't know if you know an old Steve Martin bit about how to be a millionaire and not pay income taxes.
Well, first you start. First you get $1 million, right?
First get $1 million, right? then he goes into the whole thing about how you don't pay the taxes, right? Okay, but first get $1 million. my point about freedom is that first off, that the first two cannot come at the expense of people being free. These first two wishes need to find their fulfillment in a bottom-up, people-empowering kind of a way, not in a top-down, we're going to take care of you kind of a way. If it follows that second model, I think that we will not enjoy being rich and healthy because we will not actually be controlling our own destiny. And that's really the thing that that you want to be wealthy or healthy for. That's the ultimate goal. People, you know, some people are, you know, Scrooge McDuck, and they want wealth for as an end unto itself. But what people, I think, truly want when they talk about the desire for wealth is the freedom that it brings. They want not to be tied down to a particular job, or not to have to worry about where the next meal is coming from, or, you know, whatever these day-to-day material concerns are. They want to liberate themselves from that concern. Healthy is the same thing, right? If you're in pain, if you can't walk, if you have trouble breathing, these are major inhibitors to a human expressing his or her own ability, expressing his or her own freedom, his or her own volition to carry out their life. So technology frees us. That's what it has always done. That's it makes the snowblower, okay, right? It's, you don't have to bend over and right? You know, now you start the thing up and it just blows the snow right out of the way. The snowblower is the model of what technology is all about, right? The automobile, okay? You don't have to take 2 hours to walk across town and then 2 hours to get back. You can be there in 5 minutes. And in fact, you don't have to wait for the train. You can go when you want to because it's your own automobile. Technology and knowledge are about making us more free, about putting more of our own destiny under our own control. So my point about freedom is that if we implement the technology, it is designed to do that. It should provide that for us. What we have to be careful about is that we don't implement it in some kind of paranoid top-down approach, where ultimately we cut ourselves off from the thing that we were trying to achieve anyway. I think ultimately humanity wants to be free. That's why we've built technology in the first place. So that's why the third wish has to be there. We don't want to cut off our noses to spite our face. We want to be liberated from the mindset of having to worry about getting sick, the mindset of having to worry about where your next paycheck is coming from, and the mindset of somebody else knows better, you know, what my plan for my life should be. All of that should be gone, and what should be left is a humanity that is completely empowered by this technology and that can basically know whatever they want to know, that can do whatever they want to do, be whatever they want to be, with the only limit being that my expression of my freedom, my enjoying of my well-being, doesn't interfere with yours.
Right.
That's the end game. If we can achieve that, then we have truly transformed the world. And I think those three wishes, if I may be so bold, Stephen, actually I'll ask you. I think that those three wishes sum up everything we talk about at the Speculist on Fast Forward Radio. Or have I missed anything?
No, I don't think so. Maybe a fourth one would be everybody is super intelligent. You know, but I suppose you could put that in with health or something like that. But
in fact, you know where I put that one is with freedom, because we're freeing ourselves from the limitation of from all previous limitations that we've had to endure. One of which is that we just don't quite have the intelligence that we feel that we need. We don't have the intelligence that we want in order to achieve the things that we have. So it's a very broad definition of freedom that I'm using. I'm talking about the kind of ultimate liberation, liberation from all limits placed on humanity, not just, you know, government rules, or not just what your mom told you can't do and that kind of stuff. I mean, we are talking about people being liberated from those, but also from physical limitations, no longer being subject to the old, well, you can't be underwater for too long or you're going to drown, right? No longer being subject to the old, well, you can't fly under your own power because the laws of physics won't allow that. Well, it's like they won't allow us to do it, but our future selves, I think, will be able to do pretty much anything that they want to do. And that's the level of freedom that we're talking about there.
Well, have you noticed that like fictional dystopias, usually if you classify them all, science fiction dystopias, it's generally going to be two out of three you got. You know, I mean, we're all healthy. Yeah, we're all wealthy, but we've got this centralized government that wants to keep us down, you know.
Right.
You know, it's like the utopia almost, you know. We almost made it, but didn't quite get there. And so we see those types of futures played out in science fiction all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that is the big one missing in a lot of dystopias. And in fact, unfortunately, I think that there are utopian ideals. People who picture a very happy future, but it's one where in order to achieve those first two, the third has to be significantly curtailed. And I just think that's exactly wrong. I actually think that it's almost impossible to get those first two any other way than in a sort of a bottom-up approach through empowering people and through making people more free. I think they're... In the video, I say that it's a set, and I'm actually pretty convinced that's true. That the closer you come to one, the closer you can come to another. The more you the more you dampen one down, the more you put the other two at risk.
It's Glenn Reynolds' Army of David's idea. We as the world becomes more advanced, we need to decentralize everything. We need to push things out, power out to normal people, and allow people to do what companies used to do, and companies to do what nations used to do. You know, the power works its way downward to individuals, and so that's I think that's the way it's going to go, and that makes me very hopeful that we will we'll have the freedom that will give us the health and the wealth.
That's really the goal, and it ties in very closely to what we were talking about last week. We were talking about this age of capability, where we're able to do more and more and more than we were. And capability and freedom, from this perspective, then really mean almost exactly the same thing. We're talking about almost exactly the same thing. And you're absolutely right. The capability of one generation that belongs just to an elite in the next generation belongs to the general population. We've given so many examples of that over the course of this program, I won't even go into it. I think we can take it as a given that's true. What you don't want to do is have a vision in your mind that there always needs to be some imbalance between an elite that has more capability and the individuals who have less capability. I think at some point the tide turns, and it's the individuals who are truly empowered that have the majority of the capability, and you keep elites around, you know, to manage things around the margins, or if you have, you know, a government or any kind of power structure, it's there to kind of keep things tidy, keep things in play, but not to limit what people can become capable of doing.
Exactly. Well, there will always be elites. There will always be people that have more ambition, or maybe they're extra smart. You know, whatever. But that doesn't mean that they necessarily have to spend their time figuring out how to control the masses. Let the masses decide for themselves.
Absolutely. That's I think we're on. You and I are on the same page, Stephen. So I'd ask everyone listening to please watch the video. It's called Three Wishes, and see if you're on the same page with us. Because what I'm hoping to do is that this idea and some other ideas I'll be introducing in some additional videos I hope to be putting out. This is really what we're tracking with. The World Transformed Part 2, Faster Please. How do we make those wishes come true? How do we get to a world where that's the case? And what can Stephen Gordon do to help make that happen, right? What can Matt Doing help to make that happen? I see Matt's out there in the chat room suggesting that there should be a vaccine for cavities. And Matt, you're absolutely right. That's the kind of creative thinking that we're talking about. Actually, DC's got a great idea too. Did it originate with someone further up? How about we unleash a virus that makes everybody in the world healthy?
Well, you see, that's a top-down approach that I don't like. You know, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to force a certain type of health care on somebody unknowingly. They catch something that makes them healthier. Maybe makes them dislike smoking cigarettes or something. Whatever. Let people make their own choices about things.
If it makes me dislike smoking cigarettes, I would have, you know, I can see where. Well, actually, I wouldn't have a big problem with that. But
but maybe somebody that really likes puffing away, they might rather resent having that taken away from them. So,
I'm saying that if it was a virus that made everyone immune to lung cancer, I actually wouldn't care if it came top down or bottom up. I'd really be okay with it.
It's a little bit like a fluoride in our water. You know, it's probably not a bad thing. You know.
Yeah. You know. We'll have to work through these issues, though. I think you raise a legitimate concern that if there's a health virus, we need a very clear, just like the quant saying, hey, you need to define your terms. Well, we need to define our terms. What do you mean by health virus? What's it going to do to me? You know, if it's going to prevent heart disease, diabetes, and all forms of cancer, I think most people are going to be pretty much on board. But if it's going to change me behaviorally, I don't know. If it's going to do stuff to my brain to keep me from getting mentally ill, it's like, well, that sounds good, but wait a second. What exactly is it going to do?
I like the not being mentally ill part, but you controlling my brain, I don't know about that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'll decide if I'm mentally ill. Yeah. You know?
That's right.
My friend Harvey and I will decide whether. And not Harvey the listener. I'm talking about the big rabbit standing next to me.
Okay.
Although Harvey, of course, is also welcome to have a vote on my mental health.
Exactly.
Okay, well, we're running close on our time this evening, so I'm glad we took a few minutes to kind of lay that out. And I know we had a number of other things we wanted to get to tonight. So why don't you pick one or two faves that you think we can still fit in?
Okay, well, in the limited time we have left, I wanted to mention UCLA researchers use new microscope to see atoms for the first time. That story came out just a couple of days ago. Can you imagine? I mean, we're talking modeling in real time atoms, and being able to see how they interact with one another. And, you talk about understanding chemistry in an entirely new way and being able, for example, to engineer new medicines in ways that, it's incredible. I mean, that level of technology is a big, big, big step towards the nanotech and the nanotech revolution, to be able to see the atoms now, and then be able to manipulate them after that, build whatever medicine you need, or at some point maybe build any product you like. So I think that's a big, big first step. So that happened out at UCLA.
And, you know, nanotechnology has got to be the ultimate bottom-up approach to problem solving differently, you know, until we get to femto technology or something like that. But you need this top-down view, right? You need to see the atoms in order to make the bottom-up thing work. So I think we're going to continue to have fun with that idea as we look at these things. But building stuff up from the molecular level requires that you be able to have a much clearer picture of what's happening down there than up to now we've been able to have. So that's a tremendous breakthrough. Well, tell me about Star Wars Day. I think we should.
Well, I just learned about this yesterday. Apparently, was Star Wars Day, Star Wars Day. Never heard of that. Well, May the 4th be with you. May the 4th. Anyway.
That's rather painful. Yes.
Yeah, it's so awful that we hesitated to bring it up. We note, though, that in honor of that the TomTom people are now going to be offering a update for their TomToms where you can download, and I believe this is serious. I think this is a serious story. You can download the Darth Vader voice for your TomTom. So Darth Vader can be, like, giving you directions as you go down the road. And we laughed about this, thinking, is he going to get annoyed if you miss your turn and how is that going to sound? Hilarity ensues. It's a great idea.
I love the idea of the Darth Vader GPS. I love the idea of Darth Vader giving me navigational instructions. You know, there's always this thing when you've used a GPS, Stephen?
Oh yes.
Yeah. So you know, like when you miss your turn and it starts trying to tell you, turn the vehicle around. Yeah, you know, it never loses its patience, no matter how badly you get off course. It's always, Darth Vader is not going to have the same impact, right? It's going to be a very different kind of a feel if you make the wrong turn. You know, you're going to get this kind of, you've come out of light speed too quickly. You're as impatient as you are stupid. You know, you get this, okay. I think that people's driving would be dramatically improved by the Darth Vader GPS. And this really makes me think, for next week or in the near future, I think we need to get some Vader audio. He should become kind of an honorary co-host for a while. You know, we've had our honorary co-hosts over the years. We've had Charlton Heston, and we should get him back at some point. But I'm starting to think we need some Vader on this show once in a while. What do you think?
A little Vader couldn't hurt things. Of course, we love Yoda as well. So, you know, I think pretty much whether on the dark side or the lighter side, I think some force-powered co-hosts would be awesome. So
yeah, I think we need to bring one on. Well, I know we had a number of other topics to get to, but we will we'll pick this up next week, and that might be on Tuesday, might be on Wednesday. So we'll keep you guessing on that. But and once again, for those of you who joined late, we are having an unusually brief program this evening just because of a commitment that I have work related right after the show that I have to get to. So tell me about the music, Stephen.
Okay, it's Jeff Silver returning again this week. He was with us last week, but the song tonight is No Way, No How.
No Way, No How. Now, have we had this song before?
No. Way.
No. No Way, No How. Right?
This is brand new.
The title sounds familiar. Okay, so I'm sorry.
I'm not regifting. This is a new
one.
Okay.
Jeff Silver singing No Way, No How. Well, thank you very much, Stephen, for putting that together. Thanks for finding us on a Wednesday evening, folks, and please stay tuned as we'll be providing additional details on when the show exactly will be next week. Also, as we're going to continue to provide additional details on our upcoming series, The World Transformed 2, faster, please. But we will be back next week, not clear what night, but until then, live to see it.
Time to know.